Dynamite was in Scotland for the first time tonight. They were in Glasgow. This was the final edition of Dynamite before Forbidden Door, which is coming up on Sunday. So we had more people than usual. We've had a lot of really smaller venues in recent weeks and recent months for Dynamite. So it was nice to have more people. I don't know how many people were there. They were loud. I mean, they weren't loud for everything on the show necessarily, but they were a lively bunch. And we had some developments for some of the matches that are on the card this Sunday, including the main event, or what I believe to be the main event. There is a lights out match on the show. Typically, those do close the show. So technically, I don't know if this will be closing the show. But Hangman Page is going to be defending the AEW World Championship against MJF. And it was supposed to be MJF signing his Casino Gauntlet contract and using the contract to get that title match. That was something that Hangman had duped him into last week. So they undid that on the show tonight. And they did a segment where Hangman was in the ring and looked up at the Tron and saw MJF in the back, along with Ricochet and the Gates of Agony, and they had Mark Briscoe tied to a chair. And MJF was about to set this man on fire if Hangman did not acquiesce to three demands that he had. And he was giving him a very short period of time to agree to these demands. Number one, that their title match on Sunday result in a new champion on a disqualification. So if Hangman were to be disqualified, we would have a new AEW World Champion. Hangman is to be counted out of the ring, we have a new AEW World Champion. And MJF said, well, while I have you in this situation here and I'm making demands, we're going to undo what was done last week. And I get my title match without having to cash in my Casino Gauntlet contract. And he gave him 5 seconds. And he counted to four before Hangman finally agreed. And so now the title is on the line without the contract. The contract is not going to be wasted here in this match. If MJF loses, theoretically, he will still have a guaranteed championship match that he could cash in later on. He could cash it in that night after he loses. I don't necessarily think he will. So those are the big changes and developments to the World Championship match on Sunday. You know, if I'm MJF, the smartest thing to do would just be to hire somebody to beat the shit out of me and get me, you know, the championship on a disqualification. Right? That would make the most sense. This match could be over in 2 minutes flat. All it takes is him paying somebody off to come in and punch him in the face. And just like that, we have a new AEW World Champion. I don't think it's going to end quite that easily. Will Ospreay was also on the show tonight. He is the walking wounded, and he certainly implied, without outright saying it, he implied that he is going to be having a very invasive, very major neck surgery soon that is going to see him on the shelf for quite some time. And he even went out of his way to mention that he is not medically cleared. He was not medically cleared this past week to actually perform at Forbidden Door, but he's going to. Okay. Now, I know it's a non-sanctioned match on Sunday, but my God, I mean, you know, you have somebody who is telling you in this storyline here that I'm not medically cleared, but damn it, I'm going to fight. I'm still getting in that ring, and if it's the last match I ever have as myself, I'm going to go out in a blaze of glory. I could practically see the tear streaming down Tony Khan's face in the back as he was watching this. We had the finals of the tag team tournament to decide who would challenge the Hurt Syndicate at Forbidden Door. It all built to this. This tournament has been taking place now over these last several weeks, and it all built to the finals tonight. And we had no winner. We had this weeks-long tournament, and we had no declarative winner, which means that we are now getting a triple threat match. We are getting the same thing that we got in Texas at All In. We're doing it again. We're running it back just with a couple of different teams at Forbidden Door. And so the Hurt Syndicate will have to defend their titles now against not one, but two teams. The other thing, and by the way, that was easily the best thing, the best match on the entire show. But that's not really a surprise. You put FTR in the ring with Brody King and Bandido, and you give them 30 minutes. I mean, it's going to be hard to top that, and they certainly did not. We also had another change not just the main event at Forbidden Door, but we had a change to another match at Forbidden Door because Adam Copeland and Christian Cage are going to be wrestling their first match together as a team in 14 years. You don't have to wait until Toronto in September to see it. And they were supposed to wrestle Nick Wayne and Kip Sabian. What is left of the patriarchy, I guess now it would be the matriarchy, I suppose. Apparently Nick Wayne has a broken foot, or at least that's what they said on TV. And so we had a surprise return tonight. The match is going to take place just without Nick Wayne, who, I mean, honestly, Nick Wayne is the one who Christian has been working with and wanted to work with. And this was going to be a very important match for him. And now that's out the window. But in his place is a former AEW tag team champion that we have not seen for a very long time. And I will say, I won't tell you who it is yet, but I will say that it was good to see him on the show tonight because there were some scary health situations for him over the past year where it sounded like he may never make it back to the ring. So to see him back out there tonight and to see him as the substitute at Forbidden Door, I'm happy for the guy. I'm glad that he is, you know, well enough to get back in the ring. So we'll talk about who that is and what happened tonight, because we did have an interview segment in the ring live with Tony Schiavone interviewing Adam Copeland and Christian Cage after the reunion that we saw on last week's show. And we now know all three women who are going to be challenging Mercedes Moné in the four-way on Sunday for her TBS championship. It will be Alex Windsor, as we already know, representing AEW. It will be Persephone, not Persephone, as JD said on Tuesday Night Titans last night. It will be Persephone representing CMLL. But we had no idea who was going to be representing Stardom. Like, this was the last Dynamite before Forbidden Door. We kind of needed to know who the representative was going to be from Stardom. And we did find out it is going to be Bozilla. And for those of you asking, who? You are not alone, I'm sure. But it will be Bozilla, who is a 21-year-old newcomer to Stardom who has not been there for very long. And she's from Germany. So we have a German wrestler representing a Japanese promotion on a British event being hosted by an American company. This is truly a global event, and not a single person in the world believes that Mercedes Moné is going to lose her TBS championship to any of these people representing these other promotions. But at least now we know who she's going to be wrestling. So we're going to talk about that. The women were in the main event tonight, by the way. They got the main event spot. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about a bunch of things, including this. And we'll start here with this because this was something that was made official and broke only a few hours ago. And it does affect AEW. Now, this has been the rumor going around now for about a week. It became official this afternoon, as you will see here with this graphic on your screen. WWE and ESPN have made it official. They are getting an early start to their new partnership. And WWE is going to be producing an event on Saturday, September 20th at 7 o'clock Eastern Time. That is the same night that AEW presents All Out from Toronto at 8 p.m. Eastern. WWE presents WrestlePalooza, Indianapolis, opposite All Out. And while we know this is confirmed, not confirmed yet, but very likely, is the fact that this show is going to feature the John Cena-Brock Lesnar main event. They're going to go, no pun intended, they're going to go all out here to try to make this show as big as they possibly can. Brock Lesnar and John Cena is expected to be the main event of this show. Cody Rhodes against Drew McIntyre is another match that has been rumored heavily for this show, because it doesn't look like it's happening at Clash in Paris. So we're probably looking at a double main event on that show of John Cena against Brock Lesnar and Cody Rhodes defending the WWE Championship, quite possibly, against Drew McIntyre. Now, this is going to be the first PLE to stream officially on the new ESPN streaming service. This is not ESPN Plus. They are launching a brand new service tomorrow. So there's going to be, I think, a big press conference. There's going to be a lot of media tomorrow around this launch. That's why they waited until this afternoon to make the announcement. I think WWE is going to be part of the announcement tomorrow. The key here is that this is the first of what will be PLEs on ESPN going forward every month. Peacock is no longer doing WWE main roster PLEs. They're still doing the NXT ones until the end of the year. But they are no longer doing any main roster ones. They have filled their quota. And so now it's on ESPN going forward. And if you have ESPN, the network, you will likely have free access to this new ESPN streaming service, and you will not have to pay the $29.99. If you don't have access to ESPN, well, you're shit out of luck. Unless you have a VPN, this is a great time to get yourself a VPN. Because I have YouTube TV, which means I don't have access to that service. So, in the absence of a VPN, I would have to pay for it. But nonetheless, so that's the update on that. And the other thing also, and this also ties into AEW, so I may as well mention it here. There were some rumors about the date of John Cena's retirement match. Now, John Cena's retirement match was rumored for Saturday night's main event in December. And for many months, the date was supposedly going to be December 13th in Boston. Then these reports started creeping up that, well, they might actually push to have it on December 27th. December 27th just so happens to be the night of AEW World's End in Chicago. And so they might run that last edition of Saturday night's main event this year with John Cena's big retirement match opposite the AEW pay-per-view just to fuck with them. And I just thought, you know, if that's going to be John Cena's retirement match, you know what? Just do it on a night where you have the night all to yourself so you can maximize your audience for it and not do this petty bullshit for one night. And they're not. Final Saturday night's main event of the year will be taking place on December 13th. So World's End has been spared. Unless, of course, they put together an NXT show that night, which they very well could do. But yes, World's End will not be going opposite John Cena's retirement match. Now, as I go on here, just I want to point out to those of you who are in the live chat, there is a poll in the live chat right now. Put this up earlier. You want to vote. Asking which event, obviously, if you are going to be watching at least one of them, which event are you planning on watching live on September 20th? Is it WWE Wrestlepalooza or is it AEW All Out? So go ahead and vote. All Out is winning right now, which is not a huge surprise. This is an AEW stream. But go ahead and vote, and we'll check back in on those results a little bit later. I put the same poll up on X in lieu of our typical polls. I did a poll on that. We'll check in with that later, see what the results are. Very interested to see what that looks like. This is your AEW Dynamite review. It is Wednesday, August 20th. 2025. I am the Solid Monster. Thank you for hanging out with me here on a Wednesday night. Like and subscribe. We are over 88,100 subs on our way to 89. Help me get there. Super chats are open. We have a super chat goal in the chat. It's a little bit different than usual. So if we hit that, we will do a double edition of Be the Booker. Of course, if we hit minimum 400 likes on this video while I am live, we will do Be the Booker. And if we don't, then we won't. That's going to be up to you guys. Now, this Sunday is Forbidden Door, and I will be going live Sunday night. Forbidden Door, by the way, just remember, has a 1 o'clock Eastern start time. And I'm not going to go live as soon as it's over. It's probably going to end around 5. I mean, it's an AEW pay-per-view, so what are we thinking here? 5:30-ish? 5:30 Eastern, maybe? The plan is to go live around 8 o'clock Eastern. Give myself some time to eat and then get ready for the big review. So that's the plan for Sunday. I will be live. I hope you will join me for the Forbidden Door review. Yes, it is that time of year where everybody gets excited to see matches that in most cases have no build. In terms of the actual Forbidden Door matches, you know, a lot of the AEW-centric matches, they have build to them. You may not like the build, but they do have build. But then you have these matches like Kyle Fletcher and Hiromu Takahashi, which is just sort of thrown out there. And you have Bozilla, who was announced fucking, 5 days before the pay-per-view. Okay. Whatever. Dynamite opened tonight with a surprise appearance by the American Dragon. He is not wrestling at Forbidden Door, although he'll be there, I'm sure. But he was on commentary tonight. Bryan Danielson making a surprise appearance here on Dynamite here in Glasgow. He was on commentary for the remainder of the show with Excalibur and Tony Schiavone. Taz was not there. He posted on Twitter a couple days ago that he was not making the trip. He had a knee replacement not that long ago. And apparently long flights are his enemy, so he was going to hang back, so he will not be on commentary on Sunday either. Then they showed Hangman Adam Page stepping off the train earlier today, stepping off of public transit and wheeling his luggage to get to the arena. See, a man of the people. I believe CM Punk complained about this once when he was caught. Someone took a photograph of him riding the train, right? This was in the UK when he didn't get picked up when he landed there for the Wembley show. I don't know if this was an inside joke about that or not, but again, he a man of the people here, Hangman, riding the train to the arena. So Will Ospreay made his way out next, and he got a great reaction. They sang to him once he was in the ring. He thanked them for putting a smile on his face after having the worst month of his life. Ospreay reminisced about the days when he used to wrestle in Scotland, and he said he loved the food, which got a sausage roll chant. I'm not really familiar with that. Sounds kind of interesting. Can't say that I've had one. Is that a thing over there in Scotland? Sausage rolls? Ospreay said that after what the Death Riders did to him, it was the first time that he's felt human in his career. Because when you're young, you feel indestructible, right? You feel invincible. You can do anything. Like fucking Javon Evans on NXT last night. I went back and I watched that dive when Trick Williams, he pushed him backwards off the middle rope. And my God, what the fuck was he thinking taking that bump? I mean, he was centimeters away from catastrophe on that bump. But that's what happens when you're young. You do stupid shit. You think you're invincible until one day you're not. So Ospreay said this is the first time he's really felt human. And it was to the point with him where he would do all this crazy stuff, and everybody used to look at him and say, man, you're nuts. Taka Michinoku, he said, once said that Ospreay was an alien. So Ospreay realized that he's going to have to travel down a road soon that many wrestlers have before. And then he revealed that this past week, he was not medically cleared to compete at Forbidden Door. But a lights-out steel cage match means it's unsanctioned. So therefore, it is out of AEW's hands. If he gets hurt, it's no one's fault but his own. And the fans started chanting, please don't die. I feel like they probably chant that in every Ospreay match. Ospreay said he's aware of the risks, but AEW means so much to him. He's here to prove a point that he will be the standard for those three initials. If there's a chance that he can't be the same Will Ospreay after Sunday, then he's going to leave it all out there, come Forbidden Door. Ospreay said he's doing this for revenge as he is entering this lights-out cage match with four of his best friends wanting the same thing. Before doctors take a scalpel to him and his neck, he is going to take his pound of flesh from Jon Moxley. And right on cue, Jon Moxley's music hits. He walks out with Marina Shafir. Bryan Danielson on commentary says that he promised Tony Khan that he would be on his best behavior. He's just here to be a commentator, not looking for revenge for what Moxley did to him at Wrestle Dream last year. So we got a little face-off, and as these two are facing off, Claudio and Wheeler Yuta, they slowly join up on the apron. Ospreay said that if Moxley wants to get rid of him, don't have your boys do it. Do it yourself. And before Moxley could say anything, Jet Speed hit the ring to no reaction. Nobody cared. They hit the ring. They started fighting with the Death Riders. Ospreay left. And then Hiroshi Tanahashi's music hits. I'm like, what is going on here? So Tanahashi's music hits. I guess we're going right into the opening match here. Tanahashi, this was sad because Tanahashi comes out, right? The ace, the president of New Japan Pro Wrestling, the legend, the man himself. He comes out, takes his jacket off. And I would say he was probably midway down the aisle, and he begins to try to run. I mean, as best as he could. He tries to run into the ring. I mean, I've seen grandmothers run faster. It's just pain. It's painful. It is just painful to watch. So first, Ospreay comes out a few weeks ago. Before we get into the match, let's just talk about what we heard here. We have Ospreay a few weeks ago, right? Coming out of All In. Walking out on television saying that he has two herniated discs in his neck. That he withheld from AEW Medical at least the severity of the injury that he had. Because I'm sure he's been dealing with neck pain for a while, but as far as the diagnosis, you know, of having two herniated discs, I think he said C2 and C6. You know, he claimed that he kept it a secret, but it's obviously become too much of an issue. So then you hear this promo and you think, man, this guy's going to be going away for a while. 2 weeks go by and he shows up last week, right, to make the save. And that's where he throws out this challenge for a lights out steel cage 10-man match at Forbidden Door, because Jon Moxley does not want to wrestle Darby Allin. Darby Allin was the one who laid down the gauntlet to Moxley for a singles match. And Moxley did not want to wrestle Darby Allin. Evidently, Jon Moxley, though, is okay with wrestling Darby Allin if it's part of a 10-man lights-out steel cage match, which makes all the sense in the world. And so now this week, Ospreay comes out, again, very sad, and says that, man, I'm only human, and I'm going to have to go under the knife soon. He's going to have neck, without coming out and outright saying it, he basically said he's having major neck surgery soon. So I feel like we've been kind of ping-ponging back and forth here with Ospreay. But he's out here saying, I'm not medically cleared. And that part, I'm sure, is, you know, for storyline purposes. Even though maybe he shouldn't be medically cleared. But the storyline is, I'm not medically cleared, but it's an unsanctioned match, and AEW can't do anything about it. Well, I guess not. Evidently, Tony Khan's hands are tied. There's nothing he can do. Tony Khan is powerless to do anything to stop this man. He's going to go out there. He'll break his neck if that's what he has to do, because he cares so deeply about AEW and just being all the lead and the sickos and the hardcores and the diehards and what they represent, that he's going to go out there. And if it's the last thing he does, and nobody's going to be able to stop him, including Tony Khan. So this is where we are now. No Kenny Omega. He and Kota Ibushi were announced for that big lights out match last week. There was nothing, no promo, no appearance, no nothing from them here on the show this week. The surgery, I don't know when he's having the surgery. I imagine it would be shortly after Forbidden Door. I don't know if that decision has been made. I don't know if a date has been set. But let's assume it happens fairly soon after the pay-per-view. The kind of surgery that he's implying here is something that's going to keep him out for a very long time. Like, it could keep him out for the better part of a year. And even if he was to make it back before a full year, let's say, it's too bad. Storyline wise, it's too bad, because they're going back to Wembley Stadium next year. I presume in August, because Tony Khan likes doing the bank holiday weekends. So a year from now, they're going to be back in London, but they're going to be back at Wembley, and they're going to be doing All In. And Ospreay challenging for and winning the AEW World Championship at their big stadium show in London would be the obvious path to go here. I don't see how that's going to be possible now. You know, even if he's not out for a full year, if they work it the way they've worked it for the past couple of years, which I think is the way to go, he would have to be in the Owen first, which is going to be taking place, you know, a couple months even before All In. And he would have to win the Owen, and then he could become number one contender. It seems very ambitious. Not that we haven't had wrestlers come back sooner than they should. It seems very ambitious. And he's one of Tony Khan's very, very top names. So losing him is going to be a body blow to the company, losing one of their top baby faces like that. But his health is the most important thing. You know, he has worked a style for many, many years at a very young age that has been very hard on his body. And he's been hurting for a long time. He's had, you know, other injuries, and I'm sure he's all banged up all the time. Eventually it catches up to you, as as it has now with his neck. You know, every time he works one of these matches, as great as they are, he's shaving years off of his career. So this sort of thing was inevitable, working the kind of style that he does. I think the most important thing is for them to just try to get him back as close to 100% as you could possibly get him back. Because he is going to be one of the key pieces for Tony Khan, you know, going forward once he's able to get him back. But it's going to be a very long time before we see him. So I hope whatever we see of him on Sunday, he doesn't do anything overly crazy. I would hope that he errs on the side of caution, which I know is not the way that he typically does things, but I would certainly hope that's the case on Sunday. Especially you got 9 other guys in the ring. You don't have to put it all on yourself. Not like when he was in the cage with Kyle Fletcher and it's one-on-one, right? You got 9 other guys in this match who could do all kinds of crazy shit, and they can bleed and they can jump off the top of the cage. Will Ospreay does not have to do that. So the match was Hiroshi Tanahashi, Speedball Mike Bailey, and Kevin Knight against John Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, and Wheeler Yuta. Marina Shafir, she tried to get involved early on. She got ejected by the referee. So Will Ospreay comes back out at that point on stage, picks her up over his shoulder, and carries her to the back. Kevin Knight started to make a comeback. Tanahashi tagged in. He delivered a senton from the middle rope for a 2 count. Mike Bailey delivered a series of kicks to Yuta. I know, shocking, right? Speedball delivering some kicks to Wheeler Yuta, and then delivered a moonsault to Moxley out on the floor. Knight then landed a flying clothesline to Claudio. Jet Speed and Tanahashi, they delivered 3 simultaneous twist and shout neck breakers in the ring. Tanahashi set up for a high fly flow to Wheeler Yuta, but Gabe Kidd and the Bullet Club War Dogs, they ran out. They ran distraction, and Kidd got up on the apron. He tripped up Tanahashi on the top rope. Again, you could tell the G1 just wrapped up, so they were actually able to get some New Japan names on the show tonight. Ospreay then appeared again on stage, but this time when he came back out, he had a body bag over his shoulder, and there was obviously a person. There was a body inside the body bag, and this caused a distraction. This led to the Death Riders to believe that he had Marina Shafir inside the body bag, because last time we saw him, he had carried her to the back. So the idea here, and I knew right away it was Darby Allin because it was obvious that it was, but the idea was that, oh, he's got Marina in the body bag, what's he going to do to her? As all of this is going on, Tanahashi recovers and he hits a high fly flow on Wheeler Yuta and he gets the pin. So after the match is over, the War Dogs and the Death Riders, they start a beatdown inside the ring. The Young Bucks come out on stage, and they appear right behind Ospreay. He turns around, eats a double super kick. Roderick Strong and Kyle O'Reilly, what's left of Paragon, they run out, and they chase them away. They chase the Bucks away. And Roddy seemed completely unbothered by the possibility that his wife, Marina Shafir, could very well be trapped inside this body bag. I would hope that Will Ospreay kind of clued him in that it wasn't her in the bag beforehand. Otherwise, it's going to be a conversation between those two when they get home. So Claudio and Moxley, they finally open the body bag. Of course, Darby Allin pops out and attacks them. And then the Ops come out because why the fuck not? They're not even in a match on Sunday, but here come the Ops. They join in the fight. Giant brawl breaks out that spills into the crowd. Conveniently over right by one of the tunnels, which has a little balcony for the next level right above it. And so I'm waiting and I'm watching. I'm like, where's Darby? You know what's about to happen. Where's Darby? And then sure enough, there's Darby on the balcony. And he does a coffin drop off the balcony and he takes everybody out. So the match itself was pretty much a blur. I mean, it was fine as an opening match. The post-match stuff was all over the place, but that's what they wanted to show you, that it's going to be complete chaos. Even though they're going to be trapped in a cage, it's going to be complete chaos inside, whatever this cage is going to look like. Complete chaos inside the cage for the Lights Out match on Sunday. Here, the baby faces were left standing tall, and I thought they would be on Sunday, you know, when I did my predictions the other day. I no longer believe that. I no longer think the baby faces are going to be left standing victorious on Sunday. Tony Schiavone, for the next segment, was in the ring to introduce Adam Copeland out. And he came out and the crowd sang his theme song. They were singing some Alter Bridge. Christian came out. And Christian then started to tell the fans in Glasgow to sit down and shut their mouths. And before he could say any more, Copeland just swiped the microphone out of his hand and said, "Are you really going to do that, man? Are you going to do that here?" He said that he and Christian are the greatest tag team of all time. And he admitted that Christian is an asshole. But here's the thing that Copeland has learned from over the years. Sometimes you need an asshole. I would say that you need an asshole all the time. Otherwise, that's going to get very uncomfortable. I think that's a pretty important part of the body, as a matter of fact. So yes, but yes, he says that you need an asshole in your life sometimes. And it just so happens that Christian is his asshole. So Schiavone brought up Copeland telling Christian it all in to go find himself. And he asked Christian, "Have you? Have you found yourself?" Christian said, "You know, I took some time and I did just that. I looked within myself. I looked deep within my soul. And I did find myself." And guess what he found? He doesn't need to change a thing. He is perfect just the way he is. And the fans cheered because they agree. Because now people might be wondering if the two of us are on the same page, and we are not. Says, not by a long shot. There's a lot of scar tissue there. They may not be on the same page, but at least they're writing in the same book. Now he knows people here were hoping for some bubbly reunion of perhaps the greatest tag team of all time. But that's not what this is. This is not a happy reunion. Said, this is a reunion out of necessity. Because Adam has agreed to help him with his Nick and Kip problem. And in turn, he has agreed to help Adam with his FTR problem. He can't commit to more than that, but he will stand here tonight and shake Copeland's hand, look him straight in the eye and say this version of Christian Cage will be the best version, the best tag team partner that Copeland has ever had. And with that, the fans cheered, and he put his hand out, and Copeland accepted. And then, before we could go any further, they were interrupted by Kip Sabian's voice, and he walked out on stage along with Mother Wayne. And then Mother Wayne spoke. She doesn't get promo time very often, like in front of the live crowd. But yes, Mother Wayne, Shayna, got to speak. And she said, "Who are these fans that boo us? Who are they to boo a mother? And not just any mother, a mother to the prodigy." Said Roxanne Perez. She on Dynamite? Are we getting the real Forbidden Door this weekend? No, the other prodigy. She's the mother of Nick Wayne. And they throw it to the Tron. And up on the Tron, we see Nick Wayne. Nick Wayne is not there. He's definitely not in Glasgow. It looks like he's in the garage. Remember when Swerve and AR Fox beat the shit out of him when he was training in his garage back at home? So he was in the garage there. The ring is behind him. He's standing there. And he's got two crutches. He's got one crutch on... like, they're not under his shoulders, but he has one crutch on either side of him. And Nick said that last Wednesday, Christian saved Copeland, but he wasn't far behind. I mean, literally, like, he came out to save Copeland with Spike, the board with the nails in it. And, like, as soon as Christian ran down to the ring, like, Nick Wayne was right behind him with a chair. So he mentioned that he was right behind him. And while Cage swung that spiked board... in dodging him, Nick broke his foot. And Cage took Forbidden Door away from him, a night where he would have made their reunion into a farewell tour. It's a blessing in disguise that he won't be there on Sunday, but he tells Cage he's always one step ahead. And at that point, they played a very brief video on the big screen that showed someone, and that someone was Killswitch. The former Luchasaurus, he was laying on like a table or a gurney, hooked up to all kinds of wires and tubes, seemingly coming back to life. sitting up like Frankenstein's monster. Then they cut back live, and they play his music, and he power walks down to the ring with Sabian behind him and Mother Wayne behind him. Cage clotheslines Sabian over the top rope, not realizing that Killswitch had just laid out Copeland with a chokeslam, which he did as soon as he got into the ring. So now Christian Cage and Killswitch come face to face. And Christian is obviously scared. He doesn't know quite what to make of this. They had a little stare down. Killswitch was about to walk off, but then he turned back. He goozles Christian, and he delivers a chokeslam to Christian Cage. And so Killswitch stood tall with Sabian and Mother Wayne over a fallen Copeland and Christian. Killswitch was then confirmed on commentary. The graphic was already Christian and Copeland will be taking on Killswitch and Kip Sabian. So Killswitch is officially the replacement for Nick Wayne on Sunday. And then I should point out that from this, they cut to Mark Briscoe in the back, who was just a madman. When is he not? But he was just a madman. And he was in the back looking for MJF, and he promised to kill him. So we had one threat of attempted murder, and then we had one act of attempted murder later in the show, which I will get to. As far as this segment here, I'm going to assume that Nick's legitimately injured, and he did break his foot. Nothing looked wrong last week. I even went back real quick and watched the segment from last week when he dodged the spike shot from Christian, and then he left the ring and he was moving around fine. So I don't know if he's got a broken foot. I don't know if it's a storyline. I don't know if it's a cover for another injury. I'm going to assume he has a broken foot. If so, because otherwise, the only thing I would say is him being replaced in this match does not necessarily guarantee, oh, well, it's definitely a shoot, right? Because otherwise he would be in the match. One of the things that I said last week, and I said it on TNT last night, like ideally, you would be setting up for Christian in a singles match against Nick Wayne, right? Because you could do the tag match at Forbidden Door, but you got to do Christian and Nick Wayne one-on-one. I mean, this match was designed to, in my opinion, blow off the patriarchy stuff with Christian so they can move on to Cope and Christian and FTR. But you can't really fully blow it off until you do Christian against Nick Wayne. So it's at least possible that maybe he's not hurt. This was their way of reintroducing Killswitch. Maybe he shows up at Forbidden Door. Maybe he costs Copeland and Christian the match and they actually lose off of, you know, the interference of Nick Wayne. And then we get Christian and Nick Wayne on television one-on-one. You can't completely disqualify that as a possibility. I'm going to operate under the assumption that it is a legitimate injury. If it is, it continues the bad luck streak for these Ring of Honor champions, because if he's got a broken foot, that's a few months right there. He's going to have to vacate the Ring of Honor television championship because he's the TV champion. Dustin Rhodes just had double knee replacement surgery. He's got two titles. He's one half of the Ring of Honor tag team champions, and he's one third of the Ring of Honor six-man tag team champions. So it has not been a good month if you are a champion in Ring of Honor. Now, as far as Killswitch is concerned, very, very good to see him back. He almost died. Like, it was a very, very serious touch-and-go situation late last year. For those of you who don't remember, there was a whole story about it. I think his fiance found him passed out, collapsed at home. He had to be rushed to the hospital. They found that his blood oxygen level was dangerously low. It was like 80 or something, which is not good. And also, they've discovered that he had double pneumonia in each of his lungs. We had pneumonia in each lung. So he was having breathing problems. He wasn't breathing on his own, I think, for a while. It was very, very serious. And there were certainly questions, not just about his overall health, but whether or not he would even be able to get back in the ring. And he's been gone for a long time. Now, I don't know when he was medically cleared. He could have been medically cleared months ago, for all we know. But this is just the time where they finally came up with an idea for him. Yeah, it's like in WWE. I asked the question some time ago. We were talking about Ilya Dragunov. I'm like, where the fuck is he? And then I see these reports like he's been medically cleared. They're just waiting for creative to come up with something for him to do. So that happens sometimes. But I'm very happy that he's doing better and, you know, he's able to get back in the ring. As far as the Christian and Copeland alliance here, again, it felt last week, even though they've been teasing it, it still felt rushed. Like, wow, they already gave it to us now. And then they made the announcement of the match. Instead of waiting on their first match in 14 years and doing it in Toronto, it's like, wow, they're giving this to us at Forbidden Door. So that all but guarantees it's got to be a tag team championship match now in Toronto, because you've now given away the big attraction, which is seeing these two back in the ring together for the first time in so long. The next big attraction would be them going after the tag team titles. So I guess, you know, save that for All Out. But Christian looked very hesitant last week. Like, Copeland hugged him, but he didn't really hug him back. So it kind of felt like they're not going to be quite on the same page. Well, we have to get a face-to-face segment in the ring tonight. And we did. And I'll tell you why I like what they did. I liked what they did as far as Copeland saying, you know what, this guy is still an asshole. And Christian saying, you know what? You have a need, which is some help against FTR. I have a need. I have a patriarchy problem. We can help each other out. What they established here is that Christian is still an asshole, but they're going to reunite these two, and they're going to get mileage out of the big Cope and Christian reunion, and then probably a big Cope and Christian tag team title win. They get to do all of these things with Christian not having to become a babyface, right? Because Christian is such a great slime ball heel that even if he is now more of a baby face, I don't think that should mean that he should just be a baby face, like, and do all the things that baby faces do. That would suck. That would be lame. I like the fact that they're telling you, you know what, this guy's still going to be a dick, but we're going to put these two back together and do the reunion without him betraying, you know, everything that he's been doing for the last few years and just kind of like flipping on a dime, which would be dumb. So I like that. They're not, you know, kind of bullshitting you like, oh, now he's a completely changed person. Like, nobody wants to see that. Like, I want the Christian Cage that we've been seeing in AEW. So that aspect of it I like. At least they're going to maintain that for a while. Today's episode is sponsored by Mint Mobile. Don't get burned by your wireless bill. Don't do it. You should be out enjoying the summer, traveling, going to barbecues, hitting the beach. The sun might burn you, but don't let your wireless provider do the same. That's why I made the switch to Mint Mobile. I could only see Ryan Reynolds on my TV so many times before I had to see what all the fuss was about for myself. And my only regret is that I wish I would have made the switch sooner. With Mint, you can get the coverage and speed that you're used to, but for a lot less than you're paying right now. And for a limited time, Mint Mobile is offering 3 months of unlimited premium wireless service for just $15 a month. That's less than half the cost of an AEW pay-per-view. And as great as those can be to watch, you'll get a lot more use out of this. Say goodbye to your overpriced wireless plan and those depressing monthly bills and unexpected overages. Mint Mobile is here to be your knight in shining armor. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text, delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number with you, along with all of your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless and get 3 months of unlimited service from Mint Mobile for only $15 a month. In the time I've been using Mint, I can't say that I've had any complaints about their service. It's been fast, reliable. I haven't had to deal with any dropped calls or, hey, you sounded like you were underwater there for a minute. I'm not underwater. I am not a fish. I'm very much a land mammal, and that's how I should sound when I'm on the phone with someone. Plus, when I see my bill now as compared to what it used to be, it really drives home how many people there are out there paying way more than they should be for the same basic service. If you fall into that category, it's not too late to make the switch. In fact, now is a great time to make the switch with this special offer to Sound Off listeners. This year, skip breaking a sweat and breaking the bank. Get this new customer offer and your 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Solomonster. That's mintmobile.com/Solomonster. Upfront payment of $45 required, equivalent to $15 a month. Limited time new customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds may slow above 35 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details. Now, we had Ricochet backstage with the Gates of Agony, and they were immediately interrupted by MJF, who said that bald people and the thought of being bald freak him out, but he's here to conduct business. And he doesn't like Ricochet, and while he doesn't like Ricochet, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And he wants them to help him take out Mark Briscoe tonight. Ricochet said that he would love to see MJF run around like a chicken with his head cut off, but he does admit he has an issue with Mark Briscoe, and so he accepts the offer. And they shake hands, MJF then boots the cameraman away. So we're not aware of the details of this partnership here, of this deal that's been made. We're kind of in the dark about it. Not for very long, though. After this, we had FTR against Brody King and Bandido. This was the finals of the tag team title Eliminator Tournament. The winners of this match would go on to challenge for the AEW World Tag Team titles this Sunday against Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin, who, during the match, they showed the Hurt Syndicate with MVP in the back watching. So they were paying very close attention to this match here. Harwood and Bandido, they kicked things off, ended up in a stalemate. Brody King tagged in, and he was frustrating Dax to the point that he went to ringside and started tossing chairs into the ring. Wheeler tagged in. He immediately lost a chop battle with Brody King, which sounds like a very bad idea. Bret Hart somewhere is shaking his head. Harwood tagged back in. He lost a chop battle himself. Harwood then managed to land a pile driver. Brody King no-sold it, got right back up. He then landed a running senton on both members of FTR. Bandido tagged in, and he landed a double-team splash with an assist from Brody. There was a referee distraction that led to Stokely Hathaway blasting Brody in the head with a pipe that he was concealing inside of his sling. Dax got on the microphone. He started talking shit to the crowd and told them to respect Big Stoke. This gave Brody King an opportunity to get some color here, because when the camera panned back to him, he was bleeding like a pig. This guy, he was covered in blood. I mean, he looked like he hit an artery. Like, they went to commercial and they came back and, dude, like, he's standing on the apron. He is pouring blood. I mean, it's in his eyes. He's trying to get out of his eyes. Like, he looked like he hit an artery with whatever he did. But King made a hot tag to Bandido, and he ran wild. Code Red got a close near fall on Dax, and Bandido sent both men crashing outside. That King made the tag to Bandido, if I didn't make that clear. So Bandido is going nuts here for a little bit. He tried to do a dive out onto both members of FTR. They caught him, though, on the landing, and slammed him face first down on the apron. Bandido remained isolated while King continued pouring blood on the apron. Harwood wanted a superplex. Bandido chopped free, knocked him down to the mat, hit a high crossbody for a two count. That took us into a second commercial break. And the longer this match goes, I'm thinking, okay, I wasn't aware of what the time limit was. I kind of assumed it wasn't 60 minutes. But now I'm starting to think, boy, this is going long here. We got a second commercial break. You know, might they go the distance? They come back. Bandido hits a double Hurricanrana and a DDT with Brody. Finally able to make the tag. Gets a big pop. Big cannonball senton in the corner that led to Bandido blind tagging back in as King took out FTR with a somersault senton off the apron. Bandido flew in with a dive of his own. Harwood was sent back inside as Wheeler got squashed up against the barricade by Brody. So the referee sees Stokely, and he's trying to trip up Bandido, but he does nothing. Just does nothing about it. Bandido kicks him away and then hits a frog splash on Harwood for two. Wheeler escapes a power slam attempt by Brody outside and then sends him into the ring post. Hits a tornado DDT off the apron. FTR wanted the powerplex. King, though, choked Wheeler off the apron. And Dax hit a back superplex as Wheeler flew in with a splash for a close two count. And Bryan Danielson is on commentary, and he is just losing his mind. Arkady Aura, she was doing the ring announcing tonight. She told us 25 minutes had passed, 5 minutes left in the match. right as King ate a shatter machine. But FTR missed the blind tag, so Bandido flew in with a victory roll on Cash for a two count. There was a wonky La Mahistral cradle attempt for another near fall. FTR hit an inverted doomsday device. Bandido, though, kicked out. Brody saved Bandido from a shatter machine. Now we have 2 minutes left in this match. Bandido missed the moonsault, rolled through, nearly ate a shatter machine, but countered into a DDT on Cash, who saved his partner from taking a 21-plex after that. So they finally hit the shatter machine. Took them half the match, but they finally hit the shatter machine. Brody breaks up the pin. And the fans are invested in this. You know, they're hanging on to the near falls. You know, again, Brody's pouring blood here. These guys have gone almost half an hour. So they have the crowd. We get the 1 minute time call. And this is announced over the PA system. And so there's 60 seconds left in this match. And what does FTR do? Bizarrely, they opt to set a table up outside the ring, up against the barricade. Okay. They set a table up outside for reasons that were not explained, because there's just some things that cannot be explained. There's no logic to explain something like that. Wheeler was about to hit a dive out onto Bandido. King, though, shoved his partner out of the way. And Cash Wheeler crashed and burned, went right through the table just as the time expired. So they ring the bell, the match is over. Bandido still hits a 21-plex in the ring on Dax anyway, and then covers him and counts his own fall. And starts, like, raising his hand and celebrating as you know, as if he... Like, it don't work that way, my friend, okay? Like, even in Mexico, it don't work that way, mi amigo. That, those are not the rules. That doesn't count. So, Arcadiora announces the match is a draw. Everybody boos. And you could see her, like, she puts her finger up, like, to the earpiece. And 5 seconds later, she says, oh, I've been informed. He's on the ball. I've been informed by Tony Khan that at Forbidden Door, it is now official. Both teams will challenge the Hurt Syndicate in what will now be a triple threat match, a three-way, for the AEW World Tag Team titles. And that brings out Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin. They walk out into the aisle, they hold up their titles, and they pose. And that was the end of that. It was a very good match. They went the distance. They went the full 30 minutes. You know, when I did my predictions this weekend, and even last night on Tuesday Night Titans, I floated this very idea, especially in light of these reports of MVP, you know, allegedly rejecting creative pitches for the Hurt Syndicate to drop the tag team titles to FTR at All In and to drop them to FTR at Forbidden Door. So, yeah, I mean, in light of those reports, I wasn't really surprised to see them go this route. I thought this is what they might do. Also, because if FTR would have won, you would have ended up with the Hurt Syndicate and FTR at Forbidden Door. And even if the people are cheering for the Hurt Syndicate, they're not a babyface team. They're not. It's two heel teams. So adding Brody King and Bandido, who are a very good team, like, I don't mind them adding them to that match and making it a three-way. I think it's kind of, you know, lazy that we now have back-to-back pay-per-views where the tag team title match is contested in a three-way, because they did the exact same thing in Texas. And that whole situation was very weird, because you had FTR literally sitting there at ringside doing commentary for the match when they should have been in the fucking match. Instead of wrestling on the pre-show against the Outrunners, it should have been a four-way. Just make it a four-way and put the tag team titles on the line in Texas. But that's where those reports about certain ideas being vetoed and rejected, you know, comes into play and makes the story a little more interesting. But now we have a three-way match, and so the Hurt Syndicate can drop their titles on Sunday without taking the losing fall. And I think that's exactly why Brody King and Bandido were in that match. And Brody King is the one who's going to eat the pin, I believe, on Sunday, because it would be kind of stupid to pin the Ring of Honor world champion. Brody King, I know he's bigger and all that, but he's not the Ring of Honor world champion. So if somebody was going to get pinned in this match, it would be him. And that's how I think things are going to play out on Sunday. But again, Brodito is a great team. They're a lot of fun to watch. I don't mind them getting a spot on the show. And, you know, I think it'll make for an even better match. But I will say this, like, man, if this was done as a way to placate someone who was all up in their feelings about not wanting to lose to FTR, that's sad. I mean, that is sad, and it's not a good look for Tony Khan. If that's why this was done, it's not a good look for Tony Khan. But now the match is set. Weeks and weeks of a tournament, and we never got an actual winner to this tournament. So, after this, the AEW World Champion, Hangman Adam Page, who is, it seems like ever since he's won the championship, he has been very, very angry. You would think he would have mellowed a little bit after winning the title in Texas and getting that big moment, but he just seems to get angrier by the week. And he power walked out to the ring. He was not happy about the way Dynamite ended last week. Dynamite ended last week in the parking lot with him being beaten down by MJF. And he brings that up and he says that's how MJF likes to handle things. He's very opportunistic. If MJF ever had a problem in his life, he can't look at it head on. He doesn't have the balls to. It's a waste of everyone's time to call MJF out to the ring to get the piss beaten out of him, as he is a gutless coward. Once MJF signs that casino gauntlet contract, though, there will be no backstabbing, and he swears to God that he will shove his ostrich leathers up MJF's checkered print ass. That's right. MJF's music hits, and he's waiting for him to come out, and there's no MJF. Tony Schiavone stands up at ringside, and he said that he's being told, that MJF has a message for Hangman from the back. And he's being told that if Hangman leaves the ring at any point during this video, I guess, that he's about to play or whatever's about to happen, if he tries to leave the ring and steps outside that ring, something very bad is going to happen. So now we see MJF on the big screen, and he reminds Seabiscuit that he is most vulnerable when he's angry, which is all the time. Ricochet and the Gates of Agony. So this circles back to the deal that they made earlier in the night. Ricochet and the Gates of Agony are shown with Mark Briscoe. Mark Briscoe is tied to a chair, and he is barely conscious. MJF says that Hangman will give him what he wants, and all he has is three simple requests. So MJF goes, he lifts a can of gas, he pours it all over Mark Briscoe, all over his head, and he says that if Hangman does not give him what he wants, then Briscoe is going to be Kentucky Fried. So MJF says that at Forbidden Door, this is what he wants. Request number one, the title can change hands on a disqualification. Request number two, the title can change hands on a countout. And finally, since he's basically got this guy by the balls right now, he goes, I may as well throw this in there. I wasn't planning on this, but I may as well throw this in there. You think you got one over on me last week by making me agree to put my contract up and sign the contract and cash it in instead of getting the championship match that he felt he earned. You're going to make me use my contract, but here's what we're going to do. The third request is that he doesn't have to use his contract on Sunday, but he still gets an AEW World Championship match. So Bishop Cohn, the good Bishop, he hands MJF a lighter, says that Hangman has until the count of five. And he counts one, two. And Hangman is freaking out in the ring. He's telling him to put the lighter down, because he's got a lighter in his hand. He goes, put the lighter down. Three, four. And before he can count to five, Hangman says, okay, I agree, you got it. He gave into exactly what he wanted. He gave into all of his demands. And MJF says, congratulations, Hangman is still a hero. And Page grabs a chair, and he charges backstage as they go to a commercial break. After the break, we see Hangman, he's power walking through the back. He finds Ricochet. He cracks him right in the back with that chair. and he's demanding to know where MJF is. So security now has swarmed around Hangman, and they tell him that MJF has left the building. So in response to this, Hangman punches the one security guy who told him this. He punches him in the face because... Just because. He's a hothead. He has a temper. And then at that point, he storms out of the arena. And then the Gates of Agony show up. Like, what happened? A little late to the party, I would say. Nothing like a little attempted murder when you can't get what you are hoping to get here on this show. It's a good strategy. I mean, it worked out here for MJF. I would have called his bluff. Might not have ended well for Mark Briscoe, but... So that is how MJF was able to get what he wanted here. I will say this. Obviously, this is all very silly. Anytime there's any kind of attempted murder on a wrestling show, it's obviously very ridiculous. But in this case, at least, you know, it's like, all right, he had some help from Ricochet in the Gates of Agony, and Ricochet lost to Mark Briscoe a few weeks ago and was embarrassed by him, so he sort of had an axe to grind. That's why he was so quick to agree to this. It's still, you know, very silly, but it does make the main event more interesting now. Now that MJF has the ability to go in there without the contract, challenge for the title, lose, and potentially that same night, he could still cash in and win that championship. At least the possibility of that makes the match a little more unpredictable, a little bit, and it makes things a little more interesting. I don't see MJF winning the title just yet, even with all the stipulations, because now think about it, the deck is stacked against Hangman. He could lose the title by pinfall, submission, countout, or disqualification. And MJF, if he loses, he still has that contract as his insurance policy. But I just feel like this is only Hangman's second title defense. After that big moment, that big crowning moment in Texas, it's too early to take the title away from him. And there are things that you can do in the course of this match with MJF instead of just beating him straight up. There are things you could do to, you know, protect him for another title shot or another, like a rematch with Hangman. And I'm thinking, if not at Forbidden Door, then when? And I was thinking of World's End. You know, World's End is the very last pay-per-view this year. That's the December 27th show. World's End, when was it? 2 years ago now. World's End was the event where MJF lost the AEW World title to Samoa Joe. So it would be kind of appropriate, I think, if at World's End this year, and they're in Chicago this year, if that was where he, you know, cashed in that contract and they close out the year with MJF winning the championship back at the very event where he last held it. And that gives Hangman a few months, you know, to have an actual run as champion. Give it a little bit of length and then get the belt off of him and onto MJF. So I don't know. I mean, for all we know, if he doesn't win this weekend, maybe they're shooting for Toronto at All Out. But I was thinking about World's End and thinking, okay, that would give Hangman, you know, 4 months, 4 or 5 months. MJF is going to win that title. I think when MJF cashes in that contract, he's winning the championship. Because I think Athena is not. And I think one of them at least has to successfully cash in that contract. I think it'll be him. I don't think it's going to be on Sunday, though. And so how do they do the finish? Well, I mean, there's any number of ways. I mean, he tried to burn Mark Briscoe alive. I would say there's still a pretty good chance that Mark Briscoe shows up and maybe stops him from doing something nefarious. I mentioned he goes to use the Dynamite Diamond Ring. It could be as simple as that. And Mark Briscoe shows up and stops him from doing so. Adding the disqualification stipulation, again, that's a little wrinkle. It makes things a little more interesting. But like when you have a stipulation like that and you have somebody like MJF, I go back to what I said earlier. Like, why wouldn't he just pay off someone to come out and just punch him in the face like 30 seconds into the match? You know what I mean? Like, and maybe during the course of the match, maybe they will play out something like that. But before the person can actually hit him, you know, Hangman stops him. Right, it just seems like the sort of thing that you would think he would do. But I don't know. I mean, are they going to reveal that he never really was kicked out of the Hurt Syndicate and the Hurt Syndicate helps him win? Or is somebody else going to show up? Is, you know, I don't know. I don't know. There's any number of possibilities here. But I am fairly certain that he's not going to leave London with that championship. The main event of the show was Mercedes Moné and Athena as tag team partners against Timeless Toni Storm and Alex Winza. I love that name. Mrs. Bruv. Alex Windsor. We had the CMLL representative in the four-way match for the TBS title on Sunday. She was in the front row, Persephone. She was there. And they announced that Bozilla will be representing Stardom in the TBS title four-way on Sunday. Someone who was, I don't believe, ever appeared for AEW. She's still very young. I think she's 21 years old. And still very new to Stardom. I want to say that she only first wrestled there in June, I think. And so, again, it was like we waited and who's going to be the representative. And then they just sort of dumped it on us. And it's like, okay, just plug her in there, I guess. It's just, all right. Bozilla it is, I guess. So Moné and Windsor, they started the match. Mercedes walked into a fallaway slam. And Windsor tagged in Toni Storm. Mercedes was thrown off of her game because Toni was playing some head game. She was playing some, doing some lesbian teases here, as she is wont to do in some of her matches. And this freaked out Mercedes, and so she tagged out to Athena. Storm and Athena, they traded offense for a little bit. Toni got the better of it with a backbreaker. All four women ended up in the ring, and Storm and Windsor, they took control with a pair of headbutts. Mercedes and Toni, they avoided stereo hip attacks, but she and Athena couldn't agree on a game plan. And Athena is yelling at Mercedes and demanding, like, come on, get it together here. So she has Mercedes go to the ropes and pull up on the middle rope to create an opening between the middle rope and the bottom rope. Athena comes off the ropes and she does a low dive through the ropes out to the floor onto Windsor. And in doing so, this was the sick bump of the night. Actually, both big bumps of the night came in this match. But she flew out of the ring, and man, when she hit Windsor, she also smacked her own head. I mean, like a lawn dart. She like lawn darted herself right into the announce desk. It made a thud. It looked awful for her. It looked awful. And Mercedes is sitting on the apron, right, sitting there doing her dance. Completely unbothered by the fact that her tag team partner just brained herself right in front of her. And also, she's not paying attention because here comes Toni Storm off the ropes with a running hip attack. And with her hips, she knocks Mercedes off the apron to the floor. Storm tried a DDT off the apron on Athena, who just slammed Toni down violently. Windsor was able to hit a running senton off the apron onto Athena and Moné, and all four women were down as they went to the final commercial break. Windsor was worked over during the entire commercial. Things came back with her ducking a forearm by Athena, which connected with Mercedes by accident. This allowed Storm to come on in with the Mongolian chops. Thez Press took out Athena. Moné and Athena, they regained their composure. They started making some frequent tags. Toni, though, avoided a running Meteora in the corner and then delivered a DDT to Athena and crawled towards her corner. Windsor tagged in, delivered a sit-out powerbomb on Mercedes. Athena broke up the fall. Toni and Athena, they brawled outside, and Athena delivered a Storm Zero on the ring steps to Toni Storm. This was the other big bump of the match. Fucking pile driver on the ring steps. And it looked brutal, and Athena starts cackling. Mercedes attempted a crossface inside the ring. Windsor, though, powered out and delivered a Samoan drop. Windsor then applied a sharpshooter. Mercedes tapped out, but Aubrey Edwards tells Windsor she's not the legal woman. It doesn't count. Now, the referee has just told you that this woman is not legal. And, of course, Windsor just keeps arguing the point like an idiot, like a dumb baby face. And so while she's arguing this and she's got her back turned and she doesn't see, and we don't see because it's off camera, that Athena is on the top rope in position, and she comes flying off with a flying O-face, and she drops Alex Windsor and covers her for the win. for the Windsor. There you go. See, she got the Windsor here in this match. Yes, she did. Look, I try my best here on Wednesdays to entertain myself. It's all I can do. After the match, Mercedes and Persephone, they were barking back at one another outside the ring. Tony is outside. She's clutching her neck from the pile driver on the steps. And Athena is celebrating, and that is how Dynamite went off the air. So we had a solid main event here. Looks like they're going to play up the injury. It looks like the story of Forbidden Door in multiple matches is going to be playing up various injuries. I don't know what this says about the AEW roster, that everybody is always hurt. But right, they're playing up a knee injury potentially in the Swerve match with Okada. Now that it looks like they're going to play up potentially a neck injury with Tony Storm in the match with Athena. Will Ospreay has two herniated discs in his neck, and they're absolutely playing that up going into the Lights Out cage match. Am I missing any other ones? Any other injuries going into these matches this weekend? So that's going to be the story there, it looks like. I would love it if Athena walked out with the women's championship and Tony had a chase to get it back. I don't think it's going to happen. And I don't think it's going to happen for multiple reasons. And tonight just solidified it. I mean, you know, seeing Athena stand tall and get the big win there at the end. But honestly, she is the Ring of Honor Women's World Champion. I have no idea why she is still, after all this time, almost 1,000 days now, why she has to still be the Ring of Honor Women's World Champion, but she is. And it better not be a situation where she just loses on Sunday and goes right back to ROH hell. That better not fucking happen. But because she's the Ring of Honor Women's World Champion, I don't see there being room for more than one belt collector in this division, right? We have one belt collector already. It's kind of her thing. I don't see them putting a second title on Athena and having two world titles. I just don't see it. Should be a great match. I'm looking forward to the match, but she's going to cash in her gauntlet match contract. I think she's going to lose. And I just hope that that's not the end of Athena on Dynamite. I hope this isn't just like, okay, she had her shot, she lost, back to Ring of Honor with you, right? That would be very stupid. Then I look at this TBS title match here, and the problem is, outside of Alex Windsor, right? And this is to say nothing of what the quality of the match might end up being, but you look at this field. Alex Windsor, at least, they've been giving her TV time. They've been trying to push her. She's still new to the roster, but they've been trying with her. They've done absolutely nothing to spotlight the other two challengers in that match. Like, Persephone, she's been around. I'm aware of who she is, and I'm almost positive that she's wrestled before in AEW. I don't remember now, but you know, what did we see of her in the build up to this? She was in the front row tonight. That's it. We were told that Persephone will be representing CMLL, and what we got here in the build up to this four-way match was her yelling at Mercedes from the front row tonight. With Bozilla, it's even worse. We've never seen her before. And they have not mentioned her one time because we didn't even find out she's in the fucking match until tonight. Via graphic. How they announce a lot of stuff. And it's like, okay. And they mentioned the fact that, you know, she's second generation, which I wasn't sure. I had to look it up. Like, second generation. Her father was Ulf Herman, who you may recall the original ECW in the late 90s. He was part of the Full-Blooded Italians there for a while. So that was her dad. And that's it. Second generation stardom talent, Bozilla. She's going to be in the four-way on Sunday for the TBS championship. And it's like, I see Persephone's in there, and it's like, who cares? Bozilla is going to be in the match. Who gives a shit? Does anybody in the world honestly believe that either one of those women have a prayer of actually winning the TBS championship? No. And even if they did, even if they were bigger names and people said, wow, that's a big name. Like, they haven't given you a reason to care. They have not done anything to build up these other two challengers. But it's Forbidden Door, so we have to have people in the match representing other promotions, and so we'll just sort of toss them in there, and it's just such a very lazy, lame, uneventful way to build up a match for what is supposed to be your second biggest championship in that division. So I can't bring myself to get excited for a match like that. It's slapped together, and it's not going to be anything but a win for Mercedes, because now they're close, right? Now they're close. They're 2 months away, less than 2 months away. All they got to do is hold out until October 10th. And Mercedes is going to surpass Jade Cargill as the longest reigning TBS champion in the history of AEW. They have not made it this far and not taken the title off of her to have her drop it here to Alex Windsor. At this point, you may as well go all the way with it. Let her break the record. Let her break the record, and then after that, once they got that out of their system, let her drop it to someone on the AEW roster that they actually would like to try to elevate and push to that next level. You know, they've waited so long that at this point, they may well end up coming back around later this year or beginning of next year to fucking Harley Cameron and end up having her beat Mercedes to win the championship. Remember, they did that little story with them at the beginning of the year, and it's like, well, she, you know, it's too soon, right? It's too soon for Harley. Now's not really the time, but if by chance Mercedes is still the champion, you know, the end of the year, and she won't be, but if she is, well, here we are. And yeah, it looks like she will be. But at this point, you may as well just wait. Let her break the record. Yeah, but this match here, it's like, okay, Persephone and Bozilla, and who gives a shit? But that's the issue with some of these Forbidden Door matches. It's just the lackluster build, including the Unified title match. I'll throw that one in there too. And that's not even a Forbidden Door match. That's an AEW match. But the build up to this Okada Swerve Strickland match has been very, like, dull. It's been very, very dull. They haven't even really been featured all that often on TV. Swerve has really, and maybe he is legitimately hurt, but like, Swerve has really been phased down in these last several weeks. The thing, though, is that these matches on paper, they should all deliver. Like, I'm not really worried about the quality of the match, you know, once the bell rings. I just wish I had more of a reason to actually get excited for these matches. And this is what Tony Khan typically relies on. You know, even when the booking is not great and it gives me a headache, you rely on the talent to go out there and do what they do best. You know, you rely on them to go out there and have kick-ass matches on these pay-per-views. Which is why these pay-per-views, in terms of like the in-ring quality of what we see on them, are top-notch. So I'm not really worried about that, but I wish there was more to it than just that. And in so many of these matches, throw the TNT title match in there too, there's just nothing there. But Forbidden Door card, let's go through this real quick. This is now the current, probably not final. They did not mention any of the 0 hour pre-show matches, but this is the card as it stands. I'll throw my predictions in here as we go along. Kyle Fletcher, he's going to defend the TNT Championship against Hiromu Takahashi from New Japan Pro Wrestling. Kyle Fletcher is going to retain the TNT Championship. Nigel McGuinness, he won a four-way match on Collision last week to earn the right to challenge Zack Sabre Jr. for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. And after the four-way victory, he asked Daniel Garcia to be in his corner. And Daniel Garcia, who was very frustrated that he did not win that match, agreed. And I suspect that Daniel Garcia may be going heel soon, and he may play a role in Nigel's downfall here in this match. But Zack Sabre Jr. going to walk in as the champion. Zack Sabre Jr. going to walk out as the champion. Mercedes Moné defends her TBS championship against Alex Windsor, Persephone, and Bozilla. I mean, do I even need to repeat myself? Mercedes Moné, who it looks like is on the verge very soon of winning her ninth title. She is going after another championship in Rev Pro very soon. It's actually title for title. And there's a very good chance she's going to end up with 9 belts when that match is over. She ain't losing this one, though, I'll tell you that much. Adam Copeland and Christian Cage, they're reuniting to take on Killswitch and Kip Sabian. You know what? It's not a foregone conclusion that Copeland and Christian win this match, but I feel like they have to. It would be silly for them not to, especially if the idea is for them to challenge for the titles in Toronto. You can't have them lose and then give them a tag team championship match. So Copeland and Christian, first match back in a very long time, first match ever together in AEW. I know Killswitch just came back, but that's why Kip Sabian's in there. Kip Sabian can lose the match and then get killed by Killswitch. Copeland and Christian win. In his first defense of the Unified Championship, Kazuchika Okada will defend the title against Swerve Strickland. I don't know what the status is of this supposed knee injury, if it's all storyline, if he is actually hurt. Maybe that's why we haven't seen too much of him on TV in the last few weeks. But that injury is an out for them, for Swerve, when he loses to Okada, which he will. I would not even think about taking the championship off of Okada until you play out this match at some point between him and Takeshita, who just won the G1, by the way. He may be the IWGP champion very, very soon. Depending on what happens there, that will sort of, I think, dictate the timing of the Takeshita Okada stuff. Maybe they put it off until early next year, but when he drops that championship, I think it should be to Takeshita, not to Swerve. Swerve doesn't need it. The Hurt Syndicate, Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin, defend the AEW World Tag Team titles in a triple threat match against FTR and Brodito. This is where FTR wins the tag team titles, and then they can go on to defend against Cope and Christian. This is textbook stuff here. Regardless of who may or may not like the idea, too bad. It's the idea that makes the most sense. It's the idea that Tony Khan should go with. FTR leaves London as your new AEW World Tag Team Champions. Timeless Tony Storm defends the AEW Women's World Championship against Athena. Oh, how I would love for Athena to get the win here, but it ain't going to happen. She's cashing in that contract. She's losing. Tony Storm is going to retain the AEW Women's World title. The Moldy Cheeseburger has made a prediction here. Mercedes Moné gets impregnated by Mantar Jr., but refuses to vacate her 150 belts. Mantar Jr. Imagine my shock when I was watching Triple Mania and I saw Taurus come out and I said, am I seeing things here? This looks an awful lot like someone else that I see, but I know he doesn't work for this company. Then we have the 10-man, 5-on-5, lights-out, unsanctioned steel cage match. Will Ospreay, Darby Allin, Hiroshi Tanahashi, Kenny Omega, and Kota Ibushi taking on Jon Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, Gabe Kidd, who himself is barely recovered from a meniscus tear in his knee, and the Young Bucks. This will be Tanahashi's last ever match in the UK. I was going with the babyfaces. In my original predictions, I was going with Team Ospreay for the win. I am changing my prediction, and I believe the heels are going to go over. I think Ospreay's going to, you know, he's going to give it his all and pour his heart out here and do something wild and crazy. And maybe Tanahashi will try a high fly flow from the top of the cage. Can you imagine? I don't know that this cage is going to be very big. I mentioned this on TNT last night that the Ring of Honor YouTube channel, they uploaded recently a match from 2006, which was Team CZW against Team Ring of Honor. And it was contested inside of a very unique cage that was very low, but it went around. It's almost like it was like baby-proof, where you put like a gate up for a baby or like a dog or a cat. So it wasn't very tall, but it enveloped the entire ringside area, not just the ring. And I suspect that's the kind of cage that they'll be using here. So there may not be a tall cage for anybody to jump off of, but someone's going to do something nuts in this match. And I think it's going to blow up in the babyface's faces. And I do think that, you know, they're going to do Darby and Moxley one-on-one probably at All Out. Probably makes more sense for the heels to go over here. So I'm going with the heels. I'm going with Team Moxley. Team Bucks for the win. And then Hangman Adam Page against MJF in what I assume is going to be the main event for the AEW World Championship. Things got a little more interesting here now that we know that the contract is not being cashed in. It is not being invoked for this match, which means he will still have that contract. Title can change hands a number of different ways here. I am expecting a Mark Briscoe cameo. Is Mark Briscoe going to try to help Hangman and it ends up costing Hangman because of the disqualification stip? And that's how MJF wins the championship? I don't think so. I think Hangman's retaining. It's just a matter of how do they do it? How do they do it in a way that protects MJF for, you know, an eventual championship match when he ultimately does cash in? I think Hangman is leaving London with the title. I think you want to give him a little more time with it. I know some people might look at it and go, man, just shake things up. Put the belt on MJF, right? I wouldn't hate it if they put the belt on MJF. He's going to get it anyway. Whether it's August, whether it's All Out, whether it's World's End. And I don't mind that. I just think that this needs to go on for a little bit longer. You got to play this thing out a little bit more. But there's a lot of variables at play here. Does the Hurt Syndicate get involved? Does Mark Briscoe get involved? Does somebody we're not thinking of get involved? They've opened it up now to a number of different possibilities. I think Hangman retains. Final, remember Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Final answer? This is my final answer. Now remember, it starts at 1 o'clock Eastern time. I will probably go live around 8 o'clock Eastern time. So when the show ends, you know, let a couple of hours go by, get myself situated, and then we'll go live. So that'll be on Sunday. It means that I'm going to have to try to get the podcast up a day early. So episode 926, my goal would be by Saturday night, if not earlier, to get that show up. So there will be a podcast, but it's probably going to go out a day early. So just be aware of it. And it'll be the same thing the following weekend because we have Clash in Paris. So we got back-to-back weekends of this. So just be aware of that. Now, the Twitter poll, a little bit different tonight. I mentioned the live poll in the chat. I will check that first. I have a poll going in the chat asking you, what will you be watching live on September 20th? Will you be watching WWE Wrestlepalooza or will you be watching AEW All Out? In the YouTube poll, 60% said they will be watching All Out. 40% will be watching Wrestlepalooza. Let's see how that compares to the Twitter poll. On Twitter, Wrestlepalooza, 57.3%. AEW All Out, 42.7%. So we have the inverse. Although we have a lot more votes in the X poll. We have well over 600 votes in the YouTube poll, but we have over 2,600 votes in the Twitter poll. And Wrestlepalooza is in the lead. Not by a landslide or anything, but, you know, 57 to 42 is a sizable lead there for the WWE show. And I will tell you, I'm not making my final decision yet. I'm leaning towards Wrestlepalooza because I have to just, you know, if I'm covering it live on the channel, I have to look at it from the perspective of what do people want to see that night? Maybe I'll take a poll. But that stream is going to have more traffic and do better numbers than the AEW one will, most likely. So I'll make my final decision as we get closer. But, you know, even in my case, I'm not watching both of them live at the same time. And I've got to make a choice, one or the other, which one is going to play better, you know, here on the channel, which one is going to be the one that people are going to be more interested in. And I feel like that is going to be Wrestlepalooza. Especially, you know, even beyond the Cena and Brock stuff. If they're going to do Cody and Drew possibly for the championship, and we'll see what other matches they add to the show, the interest level in that show is going to be very high. And that's the first ESPN show. So even in my case, you know, again, they're kind of fucking with my original plans here. But right now I'm leaning in the Wrestlepalooza direction. And then catching up after the fact with All Out. But we'll figure it out. We got time. Today's episode is sponsored by Factor. I was out with friends recently on a beautiful summer day, and I had to be home for, what else, a show that night. So I came home, and what did I do? I prepared myself a delicious meal from Factor for dinner, and it was ready in minutes. If I wanted to make the same meal myself, first of all, I'm no chef, but if I wanted to, it would have taken hours, and I would have missed out on all the summer fun. That's the convenience of Factor. Factor meals are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes, taking the hassle out of eating well. Factor meals arrive fresh and ready to eat, making them perfect for any active lifestyle, not just this summer, but all year round. With 45 weekly menu options, you can pick gourmet meals that fit your goals. Choose from options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, Keto, and more. Factor powers your day with nutritious breakfast, on-the-go lunches, premium dinners, and guilt-free snacks and desserts. That's your entire day taken care of without even having to give it a second thought. So enjoy more this summer. If you want all the flavor without all the fuss, Factor's got you covered. My favorite meal, by far, has been the sesame teriyaki filet mignon. Not only was it delicious, but I like that I can eat healthier and actually enjoy what I'm eating at the same time. I don't have to feel guilty when I'm done. And also, if you've set certain fitness goals for yourself, as I have, if you want to get down to your goal weight, for example, eating healthier is the way to go. You can do all the cardio in the world, but you cannot outrun a crappy diet. So I appreciate how Factor Meals allows me to stick to my goals. Just heat it up in 2 minutes, and it's ready to go. Factor takes care of the hard part. Let them take care of it for you, too, with this exclusive offer for Solid Monster Sounds Off listeners. Get started at factormeals.com/solidmonster50off and use code SOLIDMONSTER50OFF to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. That's code SOLIDMONSTER50OFF at factormeals.com/solidmonster50off for 50% off plus free shipping. factormeals.com/solidmonster50off. All right, let's go back to Super Chat number one that came in tonight. And it came in from our friend, Terrible Dried Chicken, who said, John Moxley and the Death Riders are going to have a whole lot of bad ideas for Hiroshi Tanahashi. Expect Tanahashi to bleed. I'm not worried about Tanahashi bleeding. I'm worried about Tanahashi being able to fucking walk in a straight line. I hurt when I see him walking on those knees. Also, Marvin the Martian. Where is the kaboom? If Asuka crashes out again, this dry chicken here will call the Kabuki Warriors to the... We'll call them the Kaboomki Warriors. Yeah, that's pretty awful. It's pretty awful play on words. Leave the humor to the pros, I would say. There's our friend the Moldy Cheeseburger, who says, buy, rent, or sell. Sinners, Weapons, or Fantastic Four. And have you seen the new Halloween game trailer? John Carpenter is involved. I just saw it a few hours ago. Somebody tagged me in it. I mean, it looks cool. Then there were a whole bunch of people in the comments section saying that the producers of the game have abandoned games before, and this one may not even get done. So I'm not going to get too excited until I know it's actually coming out. But it looks interesting. If it comes out, I'm definitely going to buy it. But as far as buy, rent, or sell, I'm going to buy on Sinners, I'm going to rent on Weapons, and I'm going to sell on the Fantastic Four. Three movies I all saw in the last, I think, 2 weeks. I've seen them all. Took me a while to see Sinners, but I finally saw it. Dry Chicken says, Christian Cage and Adam Copeland with these Spaceball references. Spaceballs, man. Spaceballs for the win. Spaceballs, The Princess Bride, and The Goonies were like three of those movies that, you know, as a kid when I was younger, I watched many, many times. Many, many times. Joseph Stewart, speaking of movies, says, what is your favorite song from the Batman 89 Prince soundtrack? And did you own the Prince Batman 89 soundtrack? I'm pretty sure I had the cassette tape version of it, if there was one. I vaguely remember a Batman logo on one of my cassette tapes. So I think I did. As far as my favorite song, Party Man. Watching Jack Nicholson dance to that in the movie, that was a vibe. But I got to go Party Man. I got to go Party Man. Joseph Stewart, do you remember the movie Natural Born Killers with Woody Harrelson and Juliette Lewis as Mickey and Mallory Knox? Oh, do I remember it? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I do remember it. You want to know why I remember it? Because my father took me to see it. At an age where I should not have seen that movie. And it was... It left an impression on me. Actually, as I recall, the way the movie was shot, I think it gave me a headache, too. I had to lay down. There were some empty seats. I had to lay down on the seats. But yeah, that movie was... I should not have seen that movie. I should not have been taken to see that movie. Robert Downey Jr. was in that movie. Also, do you remember the short live action... short-lived faction. The Dark Carnival in WCW with Vampiro, the Great Muta, and the Insane Clown Posse. Not really. No, I don't really have too many memories of it. Hulkling 93, you have to love security, was quick to stop Hangman for a chair shot, but not for arson. Brother, it's the same company where in storyline, Tony Khan is powerless to stop promoting a match with Will Ospreay on Sunday, despite his injuries, because it's non-sanctioned. There's just nothing the man can do. It's all very stupid. Joseph says, what is your favorite Raven match in ECW and in TNA? I don't have a favorite. See, if you would have asked me, what's my favorite Raven match in WCW? I could have told you exactly what it was. It was the match on Nitro where he lost the U.S. title to Goldberg in 98. I don't have a favorite Raven TNA match. And in ECW, the one with Tommy Dreamer. Joseph says, do you remember the WCW VHS home videotape of Sid Vicious Millennium Man? I didn't own it. I didn't watch it. I don't even know it exists. Is it true that when Vince signed Sid to the WWF in 91, that Vince wanted to make Sid the next big babyface, replacing Hogan after their match at WrestleMania 8? Well, it's all speculation. That may have been his idea, but certainly didn't feel that way just based on the way he was booked as a heel. So if that was the original plan, plans changed. Terrible Dry Chicken, it's Billy the Puppet from Saw. And he has offered you two options. Sleep on a bed filled with 1,000 bed bugs for $5,000. Or land on thumbtacks with rubbing alcohol on your body for $10,000. I will land on thumbtacks with rubbing alcohol. Thank you very much. I've dealt with bed bugs before. I don't ever want to do that again. I will land on the thumbtacks and take my $10,000. Thank you very much. Joseph says, do you think if Diesel was a draw as champion in 1995? I think we have them on the list here. I think we're caught up on the old ones. Let me bring that one up first. Here we go. Do you think if Diesel was a draw as champion in 95, that he would have had more movie roles at the time besides Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Secret of the Ooze as Super Shredder? No, I mean, I don't think one would have had anything to do with the other. I mean, how much of a draw would he have been? Even if he was a draw, he wasn't going to be some sort of mega draw. He was not Hogan. Hogan was Hogan, and look at the roles Hogan got. Like, If Nash was a little more successful as champion, I mean, what was he going to be doing? Acting with De Niro and Pacino? Like, it would not have made a difference. Joseph says, do you think Shawn Michaels could have had a movie career in Hollywood like Batista, Rock, and John Cena? No. Are you going to watch John Cena's Peacemaker series? It's on my list to go back and watch season one. I have not seen it, so I'd like to, but I'm not going to be watching season two until I can get through season one, so no. Linklex, I'm so glad the security geeks prioritize saving Ricochet and Mercedes over the man who was almost burned alive. They're the real heroes, thank God. Yeah, they must have been in like a part of the arena that was really, you know, hidden away somewhere, I guess, right? Joseph, have you seen the Wednesday series on Netflix? The series is about Gomez and Morticia Adams' daughter. No. No, I have not. I assume it doesn't star Christina Ricci. She might be a little too old these days now to play Wednesday. Omar, the man injecting Luchasaurus looked a lot like Jack Perry. I suspect he returns on Sunday and becomes the de facto leader of the patriarchy. Oh, you know what? God, I didn't even notice that. I didn't even notice who was injecting him in that little skit before he came out. Johnny Bernie, MJF and Page will follow the Punk Taker WrestleMania 29 format. In what way? It'll be the best match on the show? In what way do you mean? Havili with the $12.87 super chat. If Jade Cargill did not leave AEW, what is the possibility of losing the TBS title to Mercedes Moné or facing Toni Storm for the AEW women's title? I mean, had she stayed, I'm sure she would have had matches with all of them. So I think the chances are very high. Rank these Tanahashi rivals in order. Okada, Omega, Naito, Suzuki, Goto, Shibata, and Nakamura. Well, Okada's number one. I would probably go Okada, Naito. Maybe Goto. I mean, after that, it gets very fuzzy for me. Yeah, I'll say Okada, Naito, Goto, Shibata, Nakamura, Omega, and Suzuki. All that matters is Okada is number one. BCOM, see clearly. What the fuck is a Wrestlepalooza? I'll go with All Out. A Gorilla. I don't care if the name sounds like something I'd order at Taco Bell. Brodito needs to win those belts. It does sound like something on a Taco Bell menu, doesn't it? Oz and Glorious. Athena wrestles like one of those mini inflatable wacky two people in front of car dealerships wearing a wig. The sooner she's back in Ring of Honor, the better. Congrats on 88K. Thank you, brother. You shaming the wacky, wailing, inflatable tube men? Can't be doing that, man. Also, Oz and Glorious celebrating 50 months of channel membership. Acknowledge him. You are hereby acknowledged. 50 months, man. Right on the dot. Bender McSimpson, I have a feeling you're right about Tony Khan placating MVP. Tony feels like a weak leader, but the important thing is Mercedes and her Apollo Creed ring gear. She looked good. She looked good tonight in that gear. Dev to Dust, celebrating 41 months of membership. Boone hits a deep left. This might send the Yankees to the World Series. Boone a hero in Game 7. No one gives a shit about Boone. No one gives a shit about the Yankees. No one gives a shit about the Mets. They all fucking suck. The big fundamental, Tim Duncan, ball game over, World Series over. The Yankees win. Your super chat is about the only thing the Yankees are going to win. Power Spying Games, why is a wrestling mat called a canvas? Because wrestling is art. Very good. Also, I'll be at Forbidden Door on Sunday. Well, the O2 is going to be loud. We're going to have a lot of people there, and it's an indoor arena. It's not a giant stadium, so everything should be magnified. Everything should be louder. Have fun, my friend. Enjoy the show. The moldy cheeseburger. Why does Tony Khan rush all of these Forbidden Door matches at the last minute? It annoys me. I know who Bozilla is, but do the fans know who she is? I had to look her up, but that's not even the point, dude. Like, you know, you're booking her in a match, and I mean, literally just a match. Like, there's nothing more to it than that. Here's Bozilla, everybody. And as far as the show, I mean, literally the only thing they mentioned is that she's a second-generation talent. They never even told you who her father was. They just said she's second-generation. The moldy cheeseburger, why does... we just read that one. So nice, I was about to read it twice. Oz and Gloria says, hit that like button. That's it. That thumbs up is right there waiting for you to touch it. You have consent to touch the button. We have 10 more. 10 more likes, and we are guaranteed one round of Be the Booker. And I see the bonus goal in the chat. We're 10 out of 15. We're including yellow super chats in this goal. So 5 more there, we might get a bonus round. We got Griteo M. Missed your take on the Christian and Cope section. Is Nick Wayne's injury a silver lining for Christian versus Wayne down the line? It's a silver lining. I'm also not 100% convinced that he is hurt. I'm assuming it's a legitimate injury, but who's to say he doesn't show up and get involved and then we get the match on Dynamite in 2 weeks or something, you know? But yeah, I mean, they have to come back to it. It's only a silver lining if he's not gone for that long. I mean, if he's going to be gone for months and months, I mean, you could always try to find a silver lining in something like that, but if he's going to be gone for an extended period of time, that's not good. You know, everything that they've been sort of building up to, all that momentum, it's just going to be lost, you know? Alex says, Brother Solo, I know as a content creator, it's a logistical nightmare to cover both shows simultaneously. Just know whatever you decide to cover, we will be here to support you. I mean, I've done it before when, like, NXT was up against Dynamite and stuff. You do the two-screen experience thing. I'm not doing it with these pay-per-views, though. I'm not doing it with that. It's going to ruin the enjoyment of the shows for me. That's number one. And number two, my full focus and attention on these bigger shows needs to be on one show or the other. Especially if I have to put notes together and I'm going live right after. I'm not doing this two-screen bullshit. So I'll make a decision as we get closer, but I'm leaning towards WrestlePalooza. Project Libertad, how do you feel about Japanese and Mexican fans not liking some of the decisions that pander to American fans that both WWE and AEW did with their partner companies? Takeshita and Vikingo come to mind. I mean, the Takeshita thing, I don't understand. I think Takeshita was a fine choice to win the G1, and he actually has a contract with New Japan. So, to me, I didn't really put a whole lot of, I didn't put a whole lot of stock into what some people were saying about the Takeshita stuff. Other than, I can understand people feeling someone like a Yota Tsuji, you know, one of the young stars that they should be building up more, that he should have won. Like, I understand that. But if Takeshita wins the championship from Sabre before Wrestle Kingdom, he could drop it to Tsuji at the Dome. And I think that would mean more. And I think that's what they should do. As far as the Vikingo stuff, I mean, look, it's a fair point. You know, Vikingo was sort of, he was already beaten by Alberto and he was old news. And all of a sudden WWE moves in and it's like, we want the title on Vikingo. And you feel like they're not listening to what it is that you want. That's why they're rebelling against Vikingo and they're booing him. It's not because of anything he did. So, I mean, I think that's a fair critique. Oz says, kudos to Hangman Page for being able to navigate public transport to a UK venue and not attacking your boss and colleagues backstage afterwards. That we know of. Well, actually, he did attack his colleague backstage. He attacked Ricochet with a chair. And he punched out one of the security guards. What are you talking about? He didn't attack his colleagues backstage. He attacked two people. BCOMC clearly, what was Hiroshi Tanahashi doing? I bust out laughing because he was visibly trying his hardest. Cool, but he should not wrestle again. I mean, dude, he's in his retirement year. He's wrestling all the way through the Tokyo Dome. His last match is January 4th. Not going to stop now. Anyway, we are currently sitting at 416 likes. I love it. Boots with a 10 spot gets us to 11 out of 15 on that bonus goal. Look at Boots with the blue skull showing off. Nick Wayne is going to pull the swerve of the century at Forbidden Door. I wouldn't go that far. Nick Wayne could pull off whatever he wants to. Calling it the swerve of the century is giving it a little too much credit. But yeah, I'm not 100% convinced that he's not going to show up and it's all just a ruse. Tanahashi wrestling at the G1 opening night was horrible. Okay, I didn't see that. So was it really that bad? Who did he wrestle that night? This was probably the first time in a very long time I saw so little of the G1. I always try to catch a decent amount of it. I'm never able to watch all of it, but it's like, I don't know, I just felt like people barely cared this year. You didn't hear anybody really talking about it. No real major coverage of it. You know, it's just they're in a very cold period right now. Is why they need to build up some of these newer guys faster. I don't know why it's taken this long for them to do this. But it's time, you know. The Tanahashis of the world and Naito's been gone. Osprey's been gone for a while. Okada's gone. Like, where's the new guard, man? Where are they? I mean, they're there, but they're not really pushing them at that level yet, which is what they need to be doing. I don't know what the hell's taken them so long. But yeah, it was the lowest attendance for a G1 in more than a decade. That's not good.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the Booker.
Maybe we'll get some New Japan talents that pop up and be the Booker. Maybe we could book a better G1 than New Japan. Let's see. I'll tell you what. Let's make this our G1 card tonight. Yeah, the G1 card, they have non-tournament matches as well. So we'll have a tag match. We'll have a women's match. It'll be like our stardom match. And then we'll have our G1 main event, our G1 final. Let's see if we could book a better G1 here than Ghetto. Randy Orton and Edge. Rated RKO are going to be taking on Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Undertaker. Can we main event a G1 with a tag team match? because I think we just found our tag team match. Holy shit. Stone Cold and The Undertaker against Randy Orton and Edge. This is already a better G1 than anything Ghetto booked. This will be our Stardom match, our Joshi match of the night. Oh boy. We have Tessa Blanchard. Tessa Blanchard against Bird Girl, Lyra Valkyria. I like Lyra. Lyra and Tessa. And now our G1 final. 12 out of 15, by the way, on the bonus goal. Boots with the 10 says, was Bobby Fish the glue that held the Undisputed Era Paragon together? Where's the lie? Was Bobby Fish the glue that held them together? I mean, he may have been sniffing glue, but no, I wouldn't say he was the glue that held them together. MJF, who currently is the CMLL Light Heavyweight Champion, is now in the finals of our G1 climax here. Look at this. This guy's everywhere, man. He's in CMLL, now he's in the G1 final. MJF against Jon Moxley in the final of our G1. I'm adding a third person. We're going to have a triple threat G1 final for the first time. We're going to add one more. And oh no. Oh no. Alberto Del Dipshit, he ruined what would have been a clean sweep in the G1. This is what people are booing Vikingo for. This is the baby face that they want to cheer. I think Ghetto snuck in and he rebooked the final here. The G1. The G1. That's so bad. Oh, that's awful. That's awful. Mexico, sweetheart. All you Lucha Libre fans, what am I missing here? What am I missing? Yeah, Moxley going to win another championship. Joseph Stewart, do you remember the movie Clue from 1985 with Tim Curry? It was based off the Clue game. Yes, I'm aware of that. And I did watch the movie Clue. I like the game, too. BCOM, see clearly. I'm upset that Moxley hasn't put over Shooter clean. Have him pin Mox 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring and have him dominate him simple. Is it Ghetto or Ghetto? Had to make that joke for some reason. You really didn't have to. But you did. Joseph Stewart, do you think Kiana James and Nick Wayne would be a good pairing if Kiana went to AEW? Kiana James and Nick Wayne? What does he need Kiana James for? He's got Mother Wayne to manage all of his affairs and finances and everything. He doesn't need Kiana James. Kiana James is like, and that was her gimmick in NXT too. Like, she was very business oriented, right? She has a financial background or whatever. He doesn't need her. He's got Mother Wayne for that. She gives him a, my God, what's the word I'm looking for? Allowance. I forgot the word. Allowance. She gives him his allowance, you know? Oh, fuck me.
Shut the fuck up.
God. Fuck.
Fuck that tree.
Solo with the candlestick in the library is the one who put down crazy Uncle Dave Meltzer. As if Solo would be in the library. That's a good one. Boots, who wins between Nino Hamburguesa and Cheeseburger? Oh, Cheeseburger. Cheeseburger. Libido Bell. Hey, there's Vato's thing. Maybe if they put the AAA mega title on Vato's thing, everybody would be happy. And they would forget about Alberto. What do you think? Libido Bell says, seeing that you're both a Mortal Kombat fan and a Friday the 13th fan, have you played MKX, the one that has Jason, Leatherface, Alien, and Predator? Learning Tree needs to be replaced with My Family Tree. No, it doesn't. I actually have not played Mortal Kombat X. Or 10. Is it 10? I have 11, by the way. I haven't installed it yet, but I downloaded 11 on Steam. They had a Steam sale a few weeks ago. And I still haven't played it yet. BCOM C, clearly, we are the champions. Just played Be the Booker, biatch. Oh my God, I just noticed. Yes, 15 out of 15 on the goal. That means you guys have snuck in one more bonus round here. Be the Booker. Should we do another G1 card? This time with stipulations? Joseph Stewart, have you seen the Street Fighter movie with Jean-Claude Van Damme and Raul Julia? Yes. Raul Julia has the quote of the entire movie. Devin from NJ, in honor of both their 80th birthdays this week, buy or sell on who did a better job at giving us weekly mini movies, David Chase or Vince McMahon? David Chase. Happy birthday to David Chase. Joseph Stewart, who is your favorite Street Fighter character? Honestly, Blanka. I used to spam that shit, man. Like I'm talking like back when I was playing Street Fighter 2 Turbo, and he would do that rolling move. I would just spam that shit and then shock people. I was really good at that, and then I was doing well until I would get to was it Dalism or no, it was Chun-Li. Oh, that bitch! I could never beat her. She was always so difficult. But yeah, I'll go with Blanka. All right, it's bonus Be the Booker time, guys. So what we'll do, we'll have ourselves... Yes, Raul, Julie, it was Tuesday. Such a great line. Devin says Zangief for me. I think Rusev could play a good Zangief. I'm surprised they didn't cast him in the Street Fighter movie. What character is Goto playing? Hiroki Goto is in the Street Fighter movie. What character is he? Is he E Honda? I think he's playing E Honda in the movie. We got Roman Reigns. We got Cody Rhodes. And we got Hiroki Goto in the upcoming Street Fighter movie. And then Jason Momoa and 50 Cent. Quite the cast that they've put together here. Steel Cage. We're kicking things off here. It is the second night of the G1. And we are booking a Steel Cage tag team match. G1's not really known for filling up the card with stipulations. But we're going to do it anyway. Bret and Owen Hart. They weren't a tag team for very long, probably 2 months. But it gave us that great Coliseum video match against the Steiner brothers. I just watched that on the Vault channel a few weeks ago. Bret and Owen Hart against LAX, Homicide and Hernandez inside of a steel cage. The Hearts and LAX cage style, man. There you go. I'm giving that the bell. Isn't it always a bell when it's Owen and Bret? Usually. Unless we land on, like, well done or some bullshit like that. Fucking Fandango and Tyler Breeze. Who is she? That was wasn't that Shelly Martinez in the image with them? I think that was Shelly Martinez. Oh, man. Ultimate X. We have an Ultimate X match at the G1. And it's a women's match, too. Now, you know what? I'll tell you what we'll do. I'll tell you what we'll do. Put that on the side. We're going to book an Ultimate X main event with the men. And we'll book it with four guys. All right? But we'll do that after. I want to book a women's match first. It's going to be... Oh, my God. We go from an Ultimate X match to a Monsters Ball match. All right. Well, that's what it's going to be then. Monsters Ball with the ladies. Here at the first ever Solo Monster G1. Well, second ever Solo Monster G1. We got Medusa. Medusa in a Monsters Ball match. Against Io Sky. Yes. Io Sky and Medusa would, just without any stipulations, I think, be a very good match. With the Monsters Ball stipulation, I think they would utilize it well and probably beat the shit out of each other. I dig that very much. All right, now we're going to do two main events for you. All right, this will be whatever this is. This will be the first main event, and then we'll go back to the Ultimate X one. Very curious to see how that works out. Ooh, Grave Consequences. Greatest casket match I've ever seen. Those two guys right there, Rey Fénix and Mil Muertes. We just saw him on the Triple Mania show the other day. Macias. Lost to Von Wagner. Von Wagner. Dr. Wagner Jr. El Hijo del Dr. Wagner, whatever the fuck his name is. Not Von Wagner. That's a totally different person. All right. Grave Consequences. In our co-main event, Grave Consequences. Hey, who's this guy? Whatever happened to this guy? The winner of the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. Carmelo Hayes. He is him. Oh my God, I forgot about Von Wagner and Come Tuesday. Who could forget about Come Tuesday? It's the best day of the week. All right, Carmelo Hayes. In a Grave Consequences match. Against Triple H. And yes, indeed, it will be Grave Consequences for poor Carmelo Hayes. That is not going to end well for him. This poor guy. You may as well, I mean, just make it official, you know? Just put him in the casket, shovel some dirt on it, and just be done with it. Get the damn shovel. Let's all start shoveling. Everybody gets a shovel. Okay, we're going to go back to the Ultimate X now. I'm going to pick four guys who have to climb across those cables and pull down the X. This is our second half of our double main event here. And we have the Godfather, man. Pimpin' ain't easy. Look at this guy. Look at the swag on him. Got the vest. He's got the hat. He's got the bling around his neck. He's got the shades on. I don't know about Godfather in an Ultimate X match, though. That doesn't seem like a very good idea. Ken Shamrock, the world's most dangerous man. This stipulation is not good for these guys. Yeah. We got Papa Shango trying to climb for the Ultimate X. Godfather, Ken Shamrock, The Rock. Rock and Ken Shamrock, man. A lot of history there. What is this? Like, this is like the Attitude Era Ultimate X main event here. And Hollywood Hulk Hogan. So nice. I'm going to play the sweet noise twice. I want to see Hollywood Hogan crawl across those fucking cables and try to pull that Ultimate X down. I need to see this. Hulk Hogan, The Rock, Ken Shamrock, and The Godfather. Holy Monday Night Wars. Yeah, I mean, that's 1998 right there in a nutshell, isn't it? 98, 99. Who's climbing? And they're all supposed to climb. They're all climbing. Well, Hogan exercises creative control, so he doesn't have to climb. Hogan's strategy is to stand directly underneath so that if someone drops the X, he can just catch it. But everybody else has to climb. Well, that was a very unique main event that I was not expecting. A match that Bischoff would give up on Nitro instead of a pay-per-view. If it would buy him an extra 0.3 of a Nielsen point, he would do it. Absolutely. Can you imagine if we landed on Tanahashi and it's like modern-day Tanahashi with those knees trying to like slide his way across the cables. We got Joseph who says, did you know Street Fighter was Raul Julia's last movie, as he did before he passed away? And he also did the Street Fighter movie because his son was a big Street Fighter fan. I did know that. You could tell he was sick when he filmed it. I don't know how long it was after the movie came out. It wasn't that much longer, and then he passed away. Joseph says, do you think Wardlow and Kiana James would be a good pairing in AEW? No, I do not. Libido Bell, what's more interesting about the OG Street Fighter movie is the troubled development behind the scenes. Van Damme did a lot of coke. Is just one factor. I mean, everybody did coke back then. Right? That movie was early 90s. All right, well, I'm sure Van Damme did a lot of coke making movies in the 80s. You know, Bloodsport and everything else that he did. You can't be surprised by this. But then again, it might make the movie more interesting if they were all doing coke. Joseph says in TNA, was it in storyline that Abyss and Judas Macias were brothers? That was indeed a storyline, yes. Just like Abyss and Joseph Park Esquire. They were not brothers in real life. They were just friends that worked together. Matt Fisher, thank you for the gifted membership. He gifted a membership to the Moldy Cheeseburger. And Libido Bell, busy solo is busy. Overdue for a solo gamer. Would love to see your reactions playing WWE All-Stars and Wrestling Empire. Both games are insanity. I got a lot of games queued up, and that's not one of them. I will probably never get to that, but I do hope to get to some of these others I've got all queued up in my Steam. Joseph says, what is your favorite Jean-Claude Van Damme movie? Do I have a favorite? Is it Time Cop? Is it Bloodsport? Is it Street Fighter? Maybe Bloodsport. I wasn't a big Van Damme guy. I was a Schwarzenegger guy. Schwarzenegger, Stallone, Rambo, Rocky, Terminator. Wasn't really a Van Damme guy. Even Steven Seagal. Like, Steven Seagal, I mean, there were so many campy B movies in the 80s, but like, it wasn't Hunt to Kill. Fuck, what was the name of that movie he did in the 80s? Something to Kill? A View to a Kill? No, that was fucking James Bond. I kind of enjoyed some of those Seagal movies. Kickboxer or Double Impact? Says Big G. Sly Schwarzenegger guy, of course. Oh, Hard to Kill. There you go. Instead of View to a Kill. That was Roger Moore's last James Bond movie. With Christopher Walken. Under Siege. Yes. Actually, one of the quotes that has always stuck with me is from Under Siege 2. There's a scene in the movie, there's like two bad guys. One works for the bigger bad guy. And I think it's the bigger bad guy who, somebody said something to him like, oh, I assumed he was dead, or I assumes. And he says, like, assumption is the mother of all fuck-ups. So true. But yeah, I was a Schwarzenegger guy, man. I mean, all the movies he did, come on, man. Terminator, Terminator 2. Not just the action movies, but like the comedies too. Jingle All the Way is timeless. Who doesn't like Jingle All the Way? Joseph says, Arnold Schwarzenegger said he wants to make another Conan movie. Yeah, you know, I think he's at the point now where that's probably not a good idea. BCOMC clearly. Solo, watch your mouth, Arnold Schwartz. I'm high, by the way. Very high. Higher than Travis Scott high. That's pretty fucking high. That's pretty high, dude. Don't go too high. You got to come back down. Joseph Stewart, have you seen the movies Red Sonja? No. Last Action Hero is underappreciated. I'm more of a Kindergarten Cop guy myself. Got any twins guys in here? Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger? True Lies is a great movie. With him and Jamie Lee Curtis. And Eliza Dushku was the daughter in that movie. Gold Matthew. Better match catalog, Cena or Hogan? Saw Hulk Hogan against the Ultimate Warrior for the first time recently. 4.5 stars. Best Hogan match besides WrestleMania 18. You like that match more than me. I probably would go Hogan Warrior, WrestleMania 6. I mean, especially to a younger fan, that match was epic. But as far as like the better match catalog, I mean, again, what are you talking about? Are you talking about like iconic matches? It's hard to top like Hogan Andre, Hogan Warrior, Hogan Rock. If you're talking like just great wrestling matches, Cena. Cena has the better catalog. Joseph Stewart, have you seen the movie Cobra with Sylvester Stallone? I did many, many years ago. I did, yes. Yes. I don't remember too much from it, though. It was a very long time ago. Tango and Cash. That's another favorite of mine. Kurt Russell. Big Trouble in Little China. The Thing. Snake Plissken. Did a movie in 97 that I really enjoyed called Breakdown. Like that 80s period, man. You had Stallone, Bruce Willis, Schwarzenegger, Van Damme, Seagal. All like during that mid to late 80s period. That was the peak of the action genre. Charles Bronson. Right? Death Wish. 1980s Brigitte Wilson. Or Brigitte Nielsen. Was she the tall one from Beverly Hills Cop 2? Joseph says, have you seen Jean-Claude Van Damme's movie Cyborg? No. No, but there was the Universal Soldier movie. There was a Universal Soldier sequel that had Bill Goldberg in it in the late 90s. Have I seen any of the... Oh, Chuck Norris. Yep, don't forget about him. Have I seen any of the Expendables movies? I saw the first one. That had Steve Austin in it. Ivan Drago's wife from Rocky IV. Yeah, she was also in Beverly Hills Cop 2. Terminator 2. One of the greatest sequels ever. Terminator 2 and The Godfather 2, right? Aren't those looked at as like the two greatest sequels ever? Now, the series Twisted Metal is good. I've heard Samoa Joe is very good in it. I haven't watched it, but I've heard he's very good in his role. Libido Bell, 80s best films, 90s best shows, and 2000s best games. You forgot best music, also the 80s. And best wrestling as well. 80s had the best films, the best music, and the best wrestling. The 80s wins. Joseph says, have you seen Showdown Win in Little Tokyo with Dolph Lundgren, Brandon Lee, and Tia Carrera? You mean Showdown in Little Tokyo? I have not seen that. Man, think about it. Back then, like in the 80s, you had when they were still strong. Not only did you have, you know, the WWF, but you had Jim Crockett Promotions and, you know, Mid-Atlantic and AWA and all these different territories when they were still very strong and very healthy. That was it, man. That was the shit. Mystic J says, I think the original Terminator is underappreciated. I don't think it's underappreciated. I just think people will probably rank Terminator 2 above the original in some cases, but because Terminator 2 was so great and groundbreaking in terms of its effects, it gets talked about a lot more. I don't know that anybody has ever really said, oh, the first Terminator sucked. It just doesn't get the kind of attention the second one does. Have I seen the Crow Brandon Lee movie? I saw the first Crow. I know there were other ones without him. I didn't see those. I was never a big Crow guy. Crow Sting, yes, but not really the movie. Well, anyway, it's interesting that we're talking about this because there's going to be a segment on the Sound Off this weekend. There was a story that came out. I think it was the Hollywood Reporter. Ranked the top 10 wrestlers turned actors. And I'm going to go through that list and I'm going to chime in and comment on it and talk about this very subject when it comes to wrestlers and movies. So that'll be on episode 926 this weekend. I think many of you who are talking about movies right now will probably take a great interest in that segment. BCOM C clearly, who is the least problematic wrestler? My cousin said Cena. And I said Danielson. My friend said Okada. I don't know about Cena because of the Vince comments. Least problematic wrestler? Are we talking least problematic in terms of just how squeaky clean they were and you never heard stories about them causing problems behind the scenes? Because Cena's probably at the top of the list. You know, most other guys you always heard about, either they were difficult, they played politics, they didn't get along with people, or they got in trouble with the law, they did drugs, or they would show up to the building late. That was like the big knock on Brett. Brett was always late. But like Cena never had any kind of controversy like that. It was like after he was done as a full-time wrestler, like the whole China-Taiwan controversy and... But during his career, I'd probably go Cena. Go back and check out the other content here on the channel. A bunch of new clips went up this week. We had our Raw review here, the Raw post show on Monday night. And I'm going to be back with you for the SmackDown post show on Friday. Okay, good. Actually, I'm glad I mentioned this. SmackDown on Friday is in Dublin, Ireland. And I believe I will be able to watch it earlier with my VPN. So if I do, there will probably be an early SmackDown review on Friday night. So just watch for that. I may be going live around 8 o'clock at night. So there will probably be an earlier review on Friday. There will definitely be an earlier review next Monday. Also probably around 8 o'clock. Because that's airing live on Netflix at 3 o'clock Eastern. They're going to be in the UK. But they're in Dublin on Friday, and John Cena is back. Talking Logan Paul, I guess, not Brock Lesnar. So that is the next time I will be live with you right here on this channel. Yes, VPN alerts. VPN alerts. VPN alert, everybody. Wake up. You can get 4 extra months free with ExpressVPN. Sign up. ExpressVPN.com/Solomonster. You got to sign up, but when you do with that code at that link, you get 4 extra months free, and now's a pretty damn good time to do so. I'm going to be pushing that because I'm going to be using it myself with everything that's coming up. So VPN is not a new wrestling promotion. That's right. Holla if you hear me. Has Danielson ever had any controversy ever? Yeah, I'm sure he has. I mean, off the top of my head, I can't think of like one major controversy that he's gotten himself into, but I'm sure he must have. So I'll see you guys on Friday night. Until then, be well. Stay safe. Have yourselves a good night and come on back for a very busy weekend because we don't just have SmackDown. We have a podcast on Saturday and then Forbidden Door coming up on Sunday. I will see you guys there. Take care, guys.